I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How okay. was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
Yeah. What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia.
Episode 8.
Crazy eights.
Crazy eights.
We are going to be talking to Meredith Levien, the CRO of New York Times, about all things that the New York Times is doing, content, T brand, what's the future, some of the acquisitions that they've made in the agency world that I think are really, really interesting. But first, we want to talk about what just gets our goat. And Laura loves that. Laura loves it when I say gets our goat.
It gets my goat.
It really does get your goat. Yeah. So we were talking about things that were driving us bonkers
in the advertising industry, particularly around creative right now and content. But before we get into all of that, more news from the industry that recently broke.
So Facebook has confirmed, but they've been talking about this for a really long time. Like, right. they're getting closer to the TV model so that they're going to be licensing content and creating their own unique content. So they're licensing content from people like Attention, who we love, Vox,
BuzzFeed. And what's interesting about that is it looks like Facebook had one of two strategies, either pick the partners that everybody else in the media space, or which I hope is the smarter strategic one, is the content that consumers are engaging with most on their platform, which would make sense.
I mean, you would think that that's what they're doing, is really looking at like right. who's really getting the engagement.
So there's two forms. The long form seems like they're going to have some original IP
yep.
that they're going to own. And then the short, which they said will be 20 to 30 minute shows, which will be mostly scripted, which will be interesting to see.
With advertising breaks, by the way, so we'll talk about that
because
I've got an opinion.
Yes. And then you've got the shorter form, which seems like it will just be licensed content with the same model that everybody from NBC to Hulu to whomever is engaged in, which and Snapchat for that matter.
But who knows? I mean, who knows? Like,
but that's the stuff that's coming from the other publishers.
Right. But the opportunity here is this, right? And if I was NBC, I would actually be super worried and frustrated because they've made big investments in Recode, you know, Vox.
Right.
And big investments in, like, with BuzzFeed. So I would be worried, like, is Facebook going to get content that is preferential? What happens if I'm paying for content?
That's an interesting question. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. What happens if I'm paying for content where I'm getting paid views? Because you have to pay to play. That's the truth. We all know that, right? So
do I drop
in the algorithm? Like, what does that mean? Like, how does that work? I don't know how they're going to deal with that. But what's really interesting to me is there's a huge opportunity to create, even with those, if they're licensing content, huge opportunity to create content that is totally for Facebook, that's truly, I mean, I hate this term, right? Not branded, like in terms of branding, but tone, reason to go to Facebook to watch that content or
versus
to interact with
NBC or somebody else.
Totally. Or even their owned websites in some cases.
The relationship, actually, now that you bring it up, is an interesting one, because the relationship, at least the benefits that I've seen for NBC doing deals with Vox and BuzzFeed, has been less pulling in their content to the portfolio in as much as it's scaling outwards and creating.
That's right.
Targets that they might not be able to reach on NBC.com, for example, and being able to say, hey, we've got this extended reach. So if you're coming as advertiser X, you can, of course, advertise targeting
on
millennials
Vox and,
on NBC, but then also going across Vox. So it'll be interesting to see. Does NBC now say, hey, we want a piece of the content pie too? How is that going to work? And so these are all real time questions, people. We don't know, but we're curious and we will keep asking.
And then it begs a huge question to me, which we're going to be talking about later. And we're going to be talking to Meredith Levien about some of this is, does that end up turning Vox and more of a content production studio that they may have into a true, like,
creative agency?
Creative agency. Exactly.
And then
boom.
We need a sound effect for that, Kim. it's totally interesting. And one of the conversations we were engaged with on Twitter this week with our listeners was saying around a particular article that came out from Digiday that was talking about how micro influencers are no longer just endorsers of brands, but that brands are actually going to them and saying, like, hey, can you create an entire advertising campaign, including the creative,
from
tone,
your,
feel,
etc. From your voice.
From your voice, from A to Z.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see. And I actually was having a conversation with another mega media company yesterday and asking them explicitly, like, are brands coming to you to create just straight up creative spots, brand advertising campaigns that are white labeled? Your media company is not associated. And he was like, more than you would know.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that I think that this is important in understanding how media companies, i.e. publishers like a Vice or a Now This or, I mean,
a Vox.
Vox or yeah. BuzzFeed have credibility to come to the table. And this is something that was the impetus for this morning's rant when I was texting you today saying, I'm so sick and tired of getting served 30-second pre-rolls on top of 10-second news clips. Like everybody, I'm enamored with clickbait of the most interesting thing coming out of Washington, D.C., or in this case, the Vatican. And, you know, there's oftentimes just these 10-second news clips of Melania.
Or just the hand swipe.
Yeah, that's all I want to see. Yeah. But I got to watch a 30-second pre-roll to get to a 5-second hand slap of Melania
away from Donald
Trump. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And a lot of our listeners were actually complaining about that this week, too.
Yeah.
And saying, like, oh, this is a broken model. And I think one of the things that publishers recognize is when you put content first, add product second, I'm not saying in priority, but just in terms of what the user's coming for, you're more savvy. And I think this is what micro-influencers do too. You're more savvy in terms of figuring out how to best integrate the message versus giving it some sort of standardized template to build around the content.
So I wanted to go there too, because I think that, like, with the Facebook stuff, Facebook, you know, reportedly said that there would be ad breaks. There's a huge opportunity, right, to right size from a time standpoint, right? How much time are we going to make you look at ads?
Right.
But more importantly, make it valuable content. If there's some kind of relationship,
like,
between the advertising.
Like, why does it need 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds? Should I make a 30 second?
No, because we're living in old rules. Yeah, I mean, that's old broadcast, right? That started in broadcast, went over to remnant media digital, right? And for some reason, little remnant media and digital became the standard for video.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Bad behavior.
That makes no sense, right? I mean, I think that's why, in some ways, Vine was so, even though Vine wasn't about advertising, Vine was so genius because it was... didn't matter. It was like 6-second videos, right? That you could actually get something from. But the point is here is, like, is there an opportunity for Facebook to actually not only just create content that's right for the platform and that can live outside of the platform and grow outside of the platform, but can it actually create a whole new ad model?
Especially if it's around scripted shows. You know what the content is.
100%.
Right.
So they think the opportunity is huge here for Facebook to lead.
Actually, a best practice that came up on a panel I was on recently around how this bad behavior is starting to seep into the podcast space around host reads in particular.
It's just lazy.
It's lazy. And I think it actually was eye-opening because we're so immune in the ad world to kind of take what we know and, as we were just saying,
apply it to the new mediums.
Yeah. Right. And so what brands are starting to do is pass around, you know, boilerplate messaging points. And the same 5 points that I'm reading are the same 5 points that David Plotz is reading.
That Pod Save America.
Yeah, John Favreau is reading. That Phoebe Robinson is reading.
Exactly.
And I think that listeners are also saying, hey, how come I'm hearing the same message? And, like, do the hosts actually believe what they're saying? You know, is there an opportunity for brands to really think about the contextual nature of the podcast?
The hosts. You've got talent sitting there live reading.
Right.
And now podcasting is so much more of an intimate experience, I will argue, than just standard terrestrial radio or even satellite radio, because you have to elect, right, to put this in your ear, to download and subscribe. And so if someone's listening to Two Dope Queens, I want to hear it from their perspective. I want to hear Phoebe talk about why she likes this or what her perspective is. And so writing the content, writing the ad copy specifically for the hosts
is especially for shows that are in the top rankings on, you know,
100%, because you're pulling in potentially 500 listeners, right, per week, or 500,000 listeners
in
per week.
In some cases,
or more.
Like the daily, you're talking millions.
Right. Yeah.
We'll get there.
Listen to that.
Anyhow, we'll be back after this break with Meredith Levien,
the CRO of New York Times. So excited to have her.
Truth Matters. We'll be back.
We are so excited to have someone who not only we respect as a female.
Total girl boss.
Total girl boss. But someone who we've worked with for, I don't know, at least 4 years now. Meredith Levien, the Chief Revenue Officer of the New York Times. Thank you for joining us.
Industry renegade.
Industry renegade.
I'm so happy to be here. This is like the one podcast that I really, really, really want to do, mostly because I just want to hang out with you
guys.
That's
like, that's but making us blush. Laura can't blush because she's so tan.
She's too tan to blush.
So Meredith, there's a lot going on in your world, both as the New York Times, the media company, but also the industry pioneers of many new interesting products on the advertising side. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you're seeing the market in 2017 and where the New York Times is differentiating themselves?
Sure. That's such a big and
it's
fun
a huge question.
And we're just jumping right in.
Yeah, that's great. And I want to say one more time, I was saying this to you guys before we went on mic, so I want to say it on mic. I am so impressed that you're doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Lots of people say, I want to make a show or a book or a podcast, and very few people actually do. And the window between you saying you wanted to do it and actually doing it was like the shortest I've ever seen. I admire that.
Thank you.
So just to go to the question of how we see the marketing world and the ad world right now, we gave a name to what we think is the biggest trend going on, at least in our part of the business last year. We called it the fall of advertising and the rise of programming. And I think I've probably been in meetings with both of you where one way or another in the course of our day jobs, we talked about something related to that. But we really believe that we are in a moment where all of the rules as we understood them about advertising, not all, but most of the rules about advertising are changing. And the biggest issue is that savvy marketers need to meet consumers where they are with content that has value to them, real value to them, and in formats that are actually going to want to make them stay and engage and build a relationship. And we think that has just fundamentally changed how companies need to think about reaching their customers and keeping relationships with them.
How is that perspective and the fact that that is happening change your conversation with creative agencies?
That media companies are programming.
Yeah. I mean, that's huge. Media companies, tech companies, like everybody, brands now should be getting into programming. What does that mean? And how do you talk to a creative agency about that?
I think probably most importantly for us, we're now going to market as a creative launchpad for programming for marketers. And what that means is we have T-Brand Studio, which is a full service programming shop. And frankly, full
service.
How
old is T-Brand now?
T-Brand was born January like 7th or 8th, 2014.
Wow.
Started working on it, you know, 4 or 5 months in advance of that, basically from the day I got here and then a few weeks later when Seb Tomich got here. And it started out as a content studio. Everybody gave us a lot of credit for being a pioneer. We deserve none of that. We weren't a pioneer. Like, we were like the, you know, 100th content studio to launch something like that.
Some
We came from Forbes, which, you know, was doing lots of work in the branded content space. And we were, you know, growing up in the shadow of BuzzFeed and Vice, who had been market makers for this. But the thing we did differently and said differently, and it goes to your broader question about, does programming change our relationship with marketers? The thing we did differently is said, we are going to aspire to create content, which we now call programming, at the quality level of the New York Times, and at a quality level befitting the audience of the New York Times, the level of engagement that goes with the New York Times.
So by having that kind of conversation and by coming into meetings and saying, we're not just talking about advertising, I think that's like a huge misnomer. Like, and people talk about, especially like institutional media, as like the monetization and the advertising. You guys,
the bottom line,
you have fundamentally changed the conversation to a content programming conversation from an ad conversation. Is that still happening? I mean, are you still getting a lot of ad conversations? Like, that's where
people
come
still
in
coming
the door
with you for programmatic,
programmatic and
tonnage and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. And here's what I'll say. Distribution still has a role, right? I mean, we're running a, you know, very large and profitable newspaper. We have a fairly big digital ad business. So Of course, we still get bought for that. We figured out pretty early on, look, we've had a thesis for 4 years that has said original, independent, thoughtful, killer content creation plus distribution is our special sauce. Yeah. Distribution alone is a platform game.
That's
not
right.
The whole of the marketing mix.
And talking about models, because Alexa and I talk a lot about how the news space in particular has seen a lot of disruption from the guys at Axios and the rise of newsletter-focused publishers. We're like eagerly watching what Dan Rather is going to do coming out of News and Guts on Facebook.
I'm so interested.
I love him.
But one of the things that we challenge each other in our thinking a lot is like, what is the future? Or is it really the future? Is it harkening back to the original days of subscription model versus ad revenue model? And as somebody who is the chief revenue officer, that has to be an interesting one. And I know following your Truth Matters campaign, you saw tremendous spikes in subscription in support of the newsroom. Yep. What does that do on your side of the house how you're thinking about content and how you bring that to advertisers as a way to say the model's changed?
I would also love to say, like, is it a versus, right? So everyone talks ad revenue versus subscription. I don't think that's the conversation. Why are we having that conversation, Meredith? Why are we having that conversation?
Well, I'm glad you're changing that conversation.
We need to.
We're looking for people who bend the conversation into a new direction. You're doing
Welcome to Atlantia, Meredith.
I love it. So let me say a couple of things about it. The first one I would say is the big thesis of the New York Times in terms of our long-term business model is having a direct relationship with highly engaged consumers who make a daily habit out of brand New York Times and all that that provides and means in their lives, period.
Right.
Right now, that means we have a fast-growing and rich consumer subscription business, and we have a growing and rich ad business. And we strongly believe that those two things, to Alexa's point, don't need to exist and shouldn't exist in conflict with one another. And I think the problem in the world of digital advertising has been broadly, this is not specific to the Times, but broadly, the digital ad business grew up at odds with that which is good for consumers.
100%. 100% it did, yeah.
It's interesting, though, because why the industry has given this sense of feeling that because content exists behind the paywall, if you're subscribing to something and you're paying for it, that means that advertising shouldn't be there. I fundamentally disagree with that because creating content at the quality of New York Times journalism, shouldn't that also be something that I want to engage in?
So, if it's useful, right?
Exactly.
If it has value.
Let me say two things about that. I think there has been so much bad, interruptive, intrusive advertising that is fundamentally at odds with good consumer experience. Yeah. And I think that's why that reputation has existed. I think there's also been too many ads in too many places where ads don't belong, taking too much data from consumers who really don't mean to give up that data. So our strategy is provide a rich and fabulous and pristine user experience and put ads where they can at a minimum do no harm to that user experience and ultimately at best add value to it.
Yeah,
that's right.
I just want, so like when you were talking, I was getting goosebumps because I'm thinking about all these 20 something media strategists who are sitting at their desks with these flowcharts.
Yeah.
And I want to say, put the flowchart down and think about how else you engage this audience. I mean, it's just
It's
not line items.
Right.
Media is just a point of distribution.
That's right.
Right? And what we do as marketers, and just because you sit within a media agency, doesn't all of a sudden mean that you're not able to critically think?
Yeah.
Well, here's
about
what
how
that's,
show up.
That's
Alexa,
exactly right.
You say line item, and I think, what is a line item?
It's terrifying.
What does it mean to a person? What does it mean to a human being? And, you know, what would I say to the 22-year-old media planner who you're referring to? Think about the person on the other end of this thing that you're trying to accomplish. Like, what's going to make their choice easier or their, you know, their half hour more entertaining or their life better?
Are you going to minimize that ad to get to the content that you want to see? Yes, 100%.
Right. But let's pivot towards the future because we see you in the New York Times at the forefront of that.
Yeah. So you acquired Fake Love, who's like a digital experiential agency.
Yep. living kind of at the intersection of physical world and digital world design.
Which we talk about. We love that. Yes. Online, offline, what's that relationship? And then Hello Society, yep. who's the influencer marketing yep. company, right?
It's basically social programming with influencers as distribution.
So, I mean, I would assume, I say this with a smile, right? I would assume that you guys are really looking at carving out more probably vigorously your niche audiences and talking to them around with content and people, influencers that really matter to them, and then building out those audiences. But what's the strategy behind the acquisition?
Yeah. Fake Love helps us on the experiential side. What they bring is extraordinary imagination for
they do beautiful
where
work.
The world yeah. is going in terms of how you can think about the digital world and the physical world together. They also do this thing that like we just don't talk about enough, which is live experiences. So,
we love it.
Live experiences are the thing that,
you know Carlos Watson?
Very yeah, well.
We love Carlos.
He was at my wedding.
Was he really?
I know
Carlos Watson very well.
You know what? I should have had Carlos Watson at my wedding.
But Carlos,
he was
on a few episodes ago, and one of the things we found as a really interesting takeaway was he said the best brands, in his opinion, that are coming to Ozzy yeah. are the ones who are asking, or the most forward-thinking, are the ones that are asking for experiences.
Yes.
And those might be physical experiences. They might be digital experiences. But what does experience mean? It means participatory. It means like something I can only do in a particular moment and that requires me to participate in it.
Yeah.
And
I like that definition.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And that's like, you know, I teased Seb, who you both know, Seb Tomich.
We tease him too, by the way. A lot.
Like, let's just say I tease Seb, period. But I tease Seb all the time that experience is the new black. That's my, the reason Fake Love has been such an important acquisition for us, kind of even more important than the, monetary value.
Yep.
And I would say the same thing about Hello Society. What Hello Society gives us is this extraordinary creative capability with experts in a bunch of domains that really matter to the New York Times and really matter to our marketing partners.
Do you think you can scale experiences, or does that even matter?
That's such a good question. So my friend Andrew Essex, who's now at Tribeca Film Festival, but was at Droga for a long time, I think I stole from him the two words that I say most often: great scales. If people go to an experience, even 100 people, but that experience is extraordinary and memorable, it will scale because they're going to post about it. They're going to tell their friends, they're going to pass it on, and those friends are going to pass it on.
I think one of the things that, and we obviously watch you closely, we've worked together for a number of years. Is it
not
fair?
Not like voyeuristically, like not like we're looking in your window.
Just as much.
Not like we're looking,
and
we want to look
voyeuristically.
No, it's totally fine. I think one of the things that I've always wondered and we talk about is there a world where T-Brand spins off as its own creative agency where there is not necessarily a need to tie it to New York Times yeah. Media Co?
Great question. I feel like I'm, sitting here with the board. but it's a good question. We think about it a lot. And I'll say a lot of the work we do now, not the majority of it, but enough that it's worth talking about, isn't because companies want to buy distribution. It's because they want to buy the ideation that comes from a creative shop that is owned by and powered by the New York Times.
Have creative agencies called you for work?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, Fake Love does a lot of its work in partnership with creative agencies, and so does T-Brand. And we've got lots of examples where an agency will call us and say, help us solve a specific content problem. Our best gifts are what is the kind of content, the subject, the format, the means of discovery that's going to make a large group of people stand up and take notice? And who can do that better than an organization with the recruiting capabilities and the tools and the know-how
of
the New York Times?
We talk about this
and
all the time.
It's all ideas-driven, though. Like earlier, I wanted to say to you, you're not selling ads, you're selling,
Well, absolutely. Yes.
But you shouldn't be called the chief revenue officer. You need a new title.
Yeah. Can we rename it? Where's Mark Thompson?
Let's get him in here. We can
speaking
do a
whole of. Speaking
is this
of.
Like surprise that, like, guest moment?
No, we wish.
No, we wish it was. We wish it was because we had an amazing conversation.
He's the best,
with him.
By the way. Can we have a minute about Mark Thompson?
He's amazing.
Yes. Great. Great leader, great boss, had a lot of vision. I always say, like, so many people get lots of credit for so many different things at the New York Times. That man 3 years ago said, like, everything is the phone, and everything about our differentiation as a product and a user experience is about how fast we can really tilt the whole company to programming for that phone first. Because if we get that right, whatever device or form factor comes next, we will have proven that we're not about any one medium.
That's where it starts.
Or any one form factor, but we can do the work we do in the world in whatever way people want to experience.
He's a total visionary.
So
but he had
Mark
no
Thompson.
Idea.
Laura
he had
wants
no,
to know.
No.
So both of us. Between us in Las Vegas.
Hilarious. Some we're sitting,
I have that feeling right now,
with
by the way.
Dinner. Yeah, because you are sitting in between us. I know. It's kind of awkward. But he had no idea what was going to happen. We didn't either. We started talking. We had this great conversation, and we looked at him and said,
he was really maybe part of the rationale behind where we figured we could really have a podcast, because if we could ping pong Mark Thompson hit with his head going bing, 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 bing.
He enjoyed his every head second of it. Going back and
we're like, well, if he had a good time in that conversation, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
So, and he did, I remember.
But yeah, I mean, and one of the questions Alexa and I were adamant and pushing in was, why aren't you
on OTT?
On OTT
or on TV. Why
has Vice beaten you to that?
We were like, there's no reason. There's no reason. Tell
Unless
us
there's
now.
A reason
I'm
that we're
allow
not.
For the dramatic pause there. So, what I will say is this: great brands have been advanced through sight, sound, and motion. Great brands have been advanced
in
formats that make people feel right. You know, we don't have a top of the funnel problem in that the New York Times probably has 100% unaided awareness all over the planet. But every brand, every great brand, and we are, I always say, we are on a journey to being, we're a world-class news brand. We are on a journey to being a world-class consumer brand. And part of that journey is making many, many more people feel strongly about the New York Times, such that they make it a daily habit, such that they're willing to pay for it, such that they spend more time with us so we can engage them in more of our content and more ads. And we think sight, sound, and motion is going to play a very big role in that. So I will say, 4 months ago, if you'd said, why aren't you in the audio business in a big way?
We did. We actually. Yeah.
Well, what I want to say is we are, we're doing a lot of experimentation in video. I don't necessarily think video is the same as being on television or being in film. I think they're all kind of fusing. You know, the format is similar. But what I can say to you is there is a huge appetite now to be much more experimental there than we were 2 years ago when you asked Mark.
So everyone's talking about the bundle in television. And the other day, Viacom, Bob Bakish, the CEO of Viacom, was talking about the kind of entertainment bundle for $20. I would love the New York Times to make a news bundle. No one has done this. With credible news sources that are completely the antithesis of cable news, which is fine, right? That I could buy. If I could buy the New York Times, if I could buy some of the other players that I read and that I interact with through you, that'd be amazing. I would do it in a heartbeat. And you told me that
you
would
pay a premium for it
on my devices on any screen, whether it was video, sight, sound, and motion, as you said, I would pay a premium for it. I want the New York Times to do the first news bundle, please.
I love to hear that. What I will
say—
Should
we bring Mark in?
Yeah, where's Mark?
Mark, we got another idea.
So I'll say this just on your bundle point. We spent a lot of time thinking about that. You know, we launched a bundle with Spotify.
I love that.
5 or 6 months ago, maybe a little bit less.
Yep. You got a free subscription to Spotify?
It's basically you could buy a New York Times and Spotify premium subscription together at a discount and with great benefit. And that's been a terrific experiment for us. We're really excited about that. I actually think the pent-up demand for brands that can direct attention to things that are worth your time, there's pent-up demand for that.
Especially in the last, you know, 100 and something days, we've gotten to a place where food, like fire, water, and news,
are
basic.
Oh, that
are
was
basic,
good.
Fire, water, and news. Like good journalism is like an essential part of human
life. For that.
Right?
That was
so
good.
But that's what if you say what's driving that, that's what's driving that.
Right on. And I want to say one more thing about that. You know, we're in this interesting period where the news has become the news. And also where people are really thinking about news has, what you're saying, Alexa, is news has entered the consciousness as something people need to think about. Fake news crisis exposed that. And really serious, hardcore primary source reporting and the systems and structures required to do it and do it well have been under economic siege since newspapers lost their distribution monopolies.
That's right.
And the world is sorting that out now. And the Times feels a great sense of responsibility on behalf of the category and for ourselves to remind the world why it's important, why we need it, and why it's good to buy
and deliver
subscriptions.
And
the truth matters.
And the truth. Yeah,
what's your favorite product at the New York Times?
Oh, you know how I'm going to answer that, right? The Daily. So I
love the Daily.
I could fill up a whole.
When we get Michael Barbaro on, you'll have to
Michael
come back.
Michael Barbaro, and I would say
you should try.
I will say yes to my part of that. He's amazing. And I want to say to the two of you, what he did, and it's not just Michael, it's Michael and it's the team around him, Lisa Tobin, Sam Hedding, Kinsey Wilson, you know, what those guys, Sam Dolnick, what those guys did was make us realize that in very short order, if we've got an imaginative idea in a space where we're the insurgent, not the incumbent, we can do it, and we can do it at a grand scale because of the work we do in the world and our brand and the quality level at which we do that work. And Michael Barbaro has literally changed the way 3,500 people who work at the New York Times think about what the New York Times can be.
Yeah, I think this is huge. So, okay, we're going to play our game because we know we have to let you go.
I'm ready.
You're a busy lady.
I'm ready.
So I'm going to tell you the bad version, and we may edit this out, but the bad version is, have you ever played the game Kill, Fuck, Marry? So who are you going to kill?
I went to college. Thank God.
So we do a version, but it's what would you kill in this world, right?
Our
so
world
like
of
our world of
advertising,
marketing media, entertainment, whatever. What would you buy? Okay. And then what would you do yourself?
So it's kill.
What would you
buy,
kill? DIY. Do yourself.
Okay. I would kill the ability to post anything without understanding the source from which it came, which pretends to be in the space of journalism.
Love.
Fake news.
But like, you can't just kill fake news. Right. You got to kill the news that comes from a source that can't be verified, trusted, known, or understood as having the right to pursue that topic.
Good one.
I like that.
What's the second one?
Buy.
What would you buy?
I would buy maker equipment, and I would put it in many, many more people's hands because I think we are at the dawn of a renaissance of extraordinary ideas being brought to life by professionals, by amateurs, by people who've never made anything in their life. And the third one is
DIY.
What would you do yourself?
I want to make a movie or a film or a
You could be an
arm
movie.
Answered this, by the way, faster than anyone we've ever asked.
She's a badass female girl boss.
Including like Carlos, including everyone. Like you,
I just want to know that I answered it faster than Carlos.
So we're renaming you. You're like the chief, I don't know, idea innovator, badass of the New York Times.
We'll come back to you on
we'll email you on that.
We'll tweet it at you.
Yeah,
thank
we'll tweet
you.
It at you.
So Meredith, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they have ideas or questions or want to come create with you?
So they can email me, meredith.levian@nytimes.com. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. My EA is constantly trying to get me, teaching me how to use Instagram more effectively. And I'm on Facebook. But just drop me a note.
We'll see you in Cannes.
We are open for imagination and ideas from anywhere.
I love it. This was awesome. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much we'll for having me.
So
awesome.
Love being here. See you in Cannes.
Love you too.
Thank you.
This episode has been made possible by our wonderful family at Panoply. So big thanks to Cameron Drews, our producer.
Cameron Drews.
Matt Turk.
Andy Bowers.
Thanks so much.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with an all-new Adlandia. Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.